What's up, everybody? It's Roger and James here from the Disney Kingdom Podcast. In this episode, it's Tuesday. It's time to go back and look at some of the comic books from this past week. We've been reading some different Marvel books. Actually, our kind of list is a little bit all over the place this week. I've read some different ones than you. But some great books out this week. We had the new Darth Vader issue. We had Infinity Wars 3. I think you were reading some other bits and pieces. So let's kick off first off with Darth Vader, because I think that was definitely what kind of one of the biggest titles of the week. It's still one of my favorite Star Wars books currently out.
I agree. It's honestly probably the best one they're putting out right now. That said, this issue probably wasn't one of my favorite ones. I thought it was well done, but we've seen this kind of story with Vader before. Not the specific what they were doing, but this setup where a character is brought in with a specialty designed to do a very specific job. And then Vader's is like, okay, job's done. You're done. Bye. So it was predictable. It wasn't quite as good as some of the others.
Yeah. It's kind of this odd thing as well, like building Vader's castle, putting together the plans, which is I don't know why it is, but like Vader's castle was not really something I was really that familiar with as a concept until recently. I know they did it in Rogue One where they showed him there at his castle, but it kind of feel, I don't, is it a new thing? Cause I don't, I only really feel
it
like
it is a new thing. Yeah. Vader didn't really have a base in the old continuity, or yeah. They never really talked about it. I think he was just assumed that he stayed by the Emperor's side wherever the Emperor was, and then he would be tasked out on missions. The base on Mustafar is a Disney thing, and it was first introduced, as you said, in Rogue One. We saw it briefly when Krennic goes there. It's been referenced a couple other times in the comics.
There's an IDW series coming out this Halloween based around the castle.
Right. And I think we might have even seen a little bit of setup for that in this particular issue. There's a little side story going on with some people living on Mustafar who seem to have some kind of force abilities. Now, I'm sure that's a story that's actually going to be in this comic, but it wouldn't surprise me if the IDW comic didn't kind of branch out of that. So
this one was an interesting one. It was that whole thing of like having the Naboo ship from Padme, and then he literally burns it to a crisp, almost like to almost get rid of it. It like seems like a bit of an odd one.
Yeah, I kind of get what they were doing with that. I think it's supposed to be literally he was burned and became a new person. Now he's burning away the past of Padme, and now the Naboo ship just looks like a pockmarked crater. It might also have been at least a little bit of a power dominance thing to show this uppity architect who's boss and all that, although it's Vader, he doesn't really have to prove anything. But yeah, it was still a good issue. I mean, the quality on this series is very high, but I don't think this particular issue was one of the better ones.
No, it was good. It definitely feels like it's setting stuff up. And just going forward, I just liked how it was. I did think the Emperor looked a bit odd on it, though.
Yeah, well, the artwork in general was a little bit off. Like I said, not one of the better issues, but still a good issue. The art definitely could have used some work. Not just the Emperor. I think in general there was kind of an exaggerated, kind of harsh lines look to the entire book, which, I mean, it's always an artistic decision. So,
yeah. Jumping now over to, I'm going to just talk on Amazing Spider-Man. I think it's number 5 because after the reboot, which it was a bit of an odd one. It was like the end of the story arc because up to now, Spider-Man and Peter Parker have been split up into two different people. And this kind of book was about bringing them back together and getting rid of the villain. So it definitely felt like, and they're kind of giving a little bit of an overarch onto the next villain. But it was all nicely wrapped up in a nice little bow, and we're back to normal. And it was like, okay, I was expecting it to go a little bit longer than that. I was enjoying Amazing Spider-Man and this whole thing of splitting them apart. But they were very quickly like, no, we're putting them back together again, and then we're just going back to normal. I thought they were going to stretch it out a little bit longer.
I haven't read it, so I can't comment on it specifically, but I suspect that Marvel has heard from Spider-Man fans with the previous writer who had very extended storylines. You know, the Doc Ock is Spider-Man storyline extended on for like 30 something issues. And I think Marvel was kind of more like, no, let's just do bite-sized stories. Let's not do the overarching, or at least let's build into them rather than open right up with it. So that's my uneducated guess on what was going on. But
yeah, I'm in a full-on Spider-Man mood at the minute, so I really enjoyed reading it, and kind of I think it's all just tying in with just playing Spider-Man hours a night at the minute. It's just I'm in Spider-Man zone right now, so that comic book was exactly great. I've really enjoyed the series, so this is a reboot. It's exactly what I wanted from a Spider-Man comic. So what's been one of your picks from this week?
Why don't we pick one of the ones that you didn't read? I'll talk about Champions real fast. This is the young Avengers style story. This was an odd issue. This is a one-off or maybe a two-off issue where they decided to talk about gun violence in schools, which is, of course, a very American thing. And it's one of those things where it's a comic book talking about a very real world issue that probably wouldn't even really be an issue in a superhero world. No. Not to say that they wouldn't happen in a world, but there's no reason why a shooting at a school would suddenly take precedence over, you know, a supervillain scheme of the month. This reminds me a lot of September 11th, back in 2002 afterwards in 2001. And there was like the Amazing Spider-Man issue 36. It had the black cover.
Yeah. I got
that. It had Dr. Doom and Magneto and Juggernaut standing, or yeah, I think those three standing at ground zero and being like, oh, this is so tragic. This is so terrible. We're villains, but we're crying anyway. And it was like, literally Juggernaut destroyed one of the Twin Towers himself in X-Force. So I mean, there's a very important message in there, you know, both in Amazing Spider-Man 36 and here Champions 24. And but it gets lost because you're talking about a world where that is such a different issue. You're trying to put in a real world issue into a place where it's not an issue or where it's would be perceived completely differently. And I just kind of like Jim Zub, who was the writer, I get what you're going for, and I definitely appreciate it. It's a topic that needs to be discussed here in the States. This probably wasn't the way to do it, though.
Was it a bit preachy?
Oh, it's extremely preachy. Yeah. Jim Zub is not a subtle writer. That's part of his brand. He tends to follow classic storytelling style, classic superhero storytelling style, and it tends to be very you know, the patriotic characters are super patriotic and the villains are very schemey and you know, laugh maniacally and stuff. So. I know. I've got the spaceships behind me. So. Yeah.
Mine's more about just covering all the stock in the stock room, I'm saying. But it's this kind of thing of, like I say, these kind of stories, they're a very difficult thing sometimes to put together because, you know, the writers and the teams probably behind them have got good intentions at heart, but sometimes it can be reading to a certain audience that maybe is 100% in agreement, or then you're just going to alienate people that are completely opposite. And as far as gun control with you guys over in America, that's not something I want to touch with 25.
Right. Oh. All I will say is it's a conversation that needs to happen. This podcast is not the place to have that conversation. The Champions comic is not the place to have the conversation. Yeah. It might be decent to raise it in the Champions comic, but it's not the place to have the conversation. And it's another one of those things where you kind of like, am I even allowed to criticize this comic for trying to raise that? Because by saying, no, it's actually not a very good comic, kind of being like, oh, that means you support gun violence. And I'm like, no, I really don't. I don't want kids getting shot in school. But that doesn't mean this is a good issue of this comic. So
bit of an odd one. So I'm going to flick over now to Infinity Wars 3. Did you read this one?
No, I gave up on Infinity Wars.
Yeah, this one was an odd one because this was the pure setup for Infinity Warps. This was the issue where Gamora, rather than killing half the universe, she decided, no, what would be better? Merge the entire universe into two. So everyone, basically whoever you were standing next to, you kind of blend together. So that's why we suddenly have Spider-Man and Moon Knight and Doctor Strange and Captain America and Iron Man and Thor. And I think the other one was Miss Marvel and somebody else. And they're setting up all these different books of their adventures of these weird mashup characters. And yeah, it's a bit like, okay, I see what you're doing with this. This has got no, this has just become a what if book that I probably will keep going with the main story and maybe check out them. But this has got like no value in terms of longevity. This is just going to be forgotten and just be like, this is just a what if an alternative universe that would probably be forgotten in a few years.
If it follows the former or the current trend in Marvel, one or two characters that have become amalgams will transition into the regular Marvel universe. I don't know which ones it'll be, but they'll keep one or two characters to remind us that, yes, we did this thing, and you know, they'll stick around for a while. Maybe they'll become popular like Spider-Gwen did. Maybe they will just kind of disappear like Weird World did. But I realized that actually popped up in a comic recently, but it's one of those things that they tried to push for a little while and then kind of disappeared. And honestly, this entire thing, not even just Infinity Warps, but Infinity Wars has been just a giant cluster from the very beginning. You know, they've got the main comic, they've got the Prelude comics, they've got the Countdown comics. Each of them has four or five spin-off comics, which have barely anything to do with it in the first place. Now we've got Infinity Wars spin-offs, like as Guardians of the Galaxy last week. Now we've got Infinity Warps comics spin-offs, and it's just like, I don't care. I there is absolutely nothing of importance coming out of this comic. Just finish it up and let's get back to you know, the stories we wanted anyway.
It really is feeling like you guys had this idea, but Infinity War brought a whole new audience in for these Infinity Stones, and I mean, it's something that's been around for ages. But it's just sitting there going, this is just bonkers. But it's like, well, you're warping all these different characters. It just feels like, it's like all these countdowns and preludes, because I read most of them, and I just feel like, just get to the point already. It was no point, so many of them, and there were so many different spin-offs, and we'll read this book issue, and read this, and this. And I'm really just like, this is a really odd little event, which, like you say, I think once it's over with, well, probably most people never. I can't see how people are going to look back. Oh, this was a great event. I don't know if it's working.
And honestly, I mean, it's pretty obvious that the entire point of this was to have a tie-in to the Infinity War movies. And anybody who comes into this without a background knowledge of the comics, who's trying to be like, ooh, I loved that, you know, snap and half the universe is gone and the fight with Thanos. And it's like, Thanos isn't even in this.
He pops up in the shadow of Gamora's head. And that's basically it. It just feels a little bit like, okay, we're going to make a load of new toys and merchandise. And hopefully one of these big characters are all going to catch on, and we're going to be able to put variants in video games and stuff in the future. Because that's what it feels very much like. We're going to be getting all of these characters, these new ones they've just created, popping up in as Easter eggs and little extras. But I don't know if this stuff's it's not going to stick, because it's just, you know, putting Captain America and Doctor Strange together and then going back and redoing their origin, it just feels odd.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't understand. There are people who are going to buy it. There are people who are going to buy all of them, but it does feel like a serious misreading of the market. I mean, that's what it boils down to. Yeah. So,
okay, so we'll now jump over to one of your choices, what you've been reading.
I will very, very briefly talk about Domino, which is, of course, based on the character Domino, who recently brought to fame with the Deadpool 2 movie. This is also the return of writer Gail Simone to Marvel books. She kind of made a name for herself as the writer of Deadpool back when Deadpool was a no-name verge of cancellation character. She still, in my opinion, has one of the best Deadpool runs ever written. It was only like 6 issues plus a spinoff book, but it's really, really good. It's collected in Deadpool Classics Volume 9 and 10. Absolutely worth checking out. And I mentioned that because one of the main characters in this book is Crazy Inez, who was introduced originally in the Deadpool book. Now, having said all that, this is a kind of weird book. It's about Domino losing her power, regaining her power, becoming more in tune with her power. I don't know. It seems like it wants to do a dissection of the character, but then kind of pulls back and it's like, no. She's fine. She's at harmony. She's in peace with her. And I was like, okay. You kind of backed off right when you were getting to the interesting story. It's also not helped by some very cartoony art, some very exaggerated proportions. So it's not a bad comic, but it's not a particularly good comic either. It's okay. It's a very okay comic.
Okay. So now I'm going to flick over now to Iceman number one. Did you read that one?
I did read it, although I have to admit I barely remember it. So
yeah, it was a bit of an odd one. Iceman then teams up with Bishop and goes into the subway to help some mutants facing off with Morlocks or something like that.
Okay, we can talk about the Morlocks.
Yeah, which I'll be honest, I was a bit like, I'm always a bit hit and miss with X-Men comics. I've said it in the past. There's been too many of them and too many different stuff, and it's very tricky sometimes to jump in. It was a bit like, well, are we fighting for them or against them? And then we had other characters in there with, it was just an odd issue.
Yes. So I'm going to tangent off a little bit here and talk about the Morlocks. And you're talking about, are they good guys? Are they antagonists? Or are they allies? And the answer is, it changes every single time they show up. There's no clear definition of the Morlocks, but the idea behind the Morlocks originally, and we're talking back in the 80s, was that they live underground and they are the mutants who gained powers that don't really fit into society. They're not the pretty powers like the X-Men have. They tend to be ugly and they tend to be very impractical powers. So you can't even be like, oh, well, you know, Nightcrawler looks like a demon, but he's got really cool powers, so it works out. Now, these are guys who like have tentacles for arms and stuff like that. So
makes sense. It makes sense for, you know, like that kind of thing of, like you say, if you're turning into a massive, great big green monster that can't do anything, you can't really carry on your life.
Yeah. So they live in the streets of the sewers of New York, kind of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle style. They have their little community. They protect each other, etc. And that is the idea behind the Morlocks. Now, why they're getting dragged into Iceman number one, I think they're trying to do like a parallel between the fact that Bobby is gay and, you know, social anxiety, acceptance, etc., and the Morlocks, who are visually socially undesirable. And I don't know if it really worked, but
yeah, I mean, I thought Iceman, I thought being that thing of him being openly gay and joking about it, making funny quips, I thought that was good. I thought that was, it felt natural. It felt very, you know, that thing of like, you've taken a character and you've changed him from what he would, you know, because I remember the Iceman cartoon from when I was a kid. And it's that kind of thing of like, this is where you retrofit a character to something. And I think this works. I think this is a good way of doing it. You know, him joking about it, going to nightclub. I did like that aspect of it. I thought that it didn't, because Iceman was always a bit bland to me. Right. So I actually do think that this works quite well. I thought that worked, and I do think this is probably could be a good way of kind of incorporating. I think they need to do more, but I think this is a good start.
And it is, and I think it's worth remembering, of course, this is actually a continuation of a previous Iceman series that ran earlier this year and got canceled, and now it's getting a second shot. The writer, who is Sina Grace, I might be mispronouncing that name, wrote the original series as well. She has a very good grasp of Iceman's character. And the strength of the comic is in characterization, not just hers, but Bishop's and the other characters as well. I think that her plotting is a bit weaker, and that's kind of where it falls apart a bit. But yes, in terms of like building the character, voicing the character, giving Bobby a purpose, giving him an actual characterization other than just being Iceman, the guy who throws snowballs, is very good. And I'm perfectly fine with them continuing to follow down this, continue to explore his sexuality, his kind of coming to understand what he is as a person, how it defines him, how it doesn't define him, that kind of thing. So that aspect of the book, I'm totally behind.
And also, it felt natural to me. That's kind of it. It's that thing of just, not everything has to be serious all the time. And it just, I thought it was well done, and I just was like, yeah, I'm fine with it. I will carry on another issue or two, see how I go. It depends on where the story goes and stuff, but yeah, I enjoyed reading it. I was like, oh, this is that angle sort of made it a little bit fresher, and that was good, and I enjoyed that part of it.
It's definitely a character book. It's a book about the characters, and the action is just kind of this is how we're going to get to talk about the character, which is probably why I don't remember most of it.
Yeah. Flicking now over to Fantastic Four 2, which saw them on a... this just threw me completely a loop, because this wasn't where I was expecting the comic book to go, and suddenly we got the Fantastic Two and their kids jumping from universe to universe that they're creating to go explore, and then some weird thing comes out of the black hole and starts wanting to eat them.
Right. So,
and then suddenly then... Mr. Fantastic brings the entire Marvel Universe in, because every single member of them was part of the Fantastic Four before she said they cheated. And I was like, where the heck did this come from?
Yeah, so as an issue, I thought it started out really well. That first half of the book where they're like, oh, we're exploring all these creations, and Franklin is creating these universes, and he's taking input from people. So he's like, this is an aquatic universe with a lot of aquatic planets, because one of our team members loves aquatic stuff. And then this one has more caves because there weren't enough caves in the last one. And here's one with unicorns or narwhals. Something. Yeah, narwhals. Narwallabies.
Yeah,
that was it. And, and that was so much fun, because that is traditional Fantastic Four storytelling, where they just like, they're explorers, they're doing very weird stuff, they're seeing crazy new universes, and that was very Fantastic Four-esque. So I loved the first half. And then you get to that point where you mention this woman shows up, she's like Entropy or something like that, and she just arbitrarily shows up. We're just like, oh, okay. And Franklin's powers don't work because reasons. And she kills a character off, and now they're doing this thing. And then Mr. Fantastic. And then she's like, no, if I'm going to kill you, I'm going to do it right. Summon the rest of the Fantastic Four. And so Mr. Fantastic's like, sure. All right. And like you said, he brings in half the Marvel Universe, who are just like, oh, yeah, these are the Fantastic 40 or whatever. So, the first half of the book, I give high marks. The second half of the book, I'm like, the heck was this?
Yeah. It just felt like, to me, I'm like, it wasn't, I've been reading like the Fantastic, the two and one, and like building up to this thing of, them coming back. It's like we didn't even have the moment of them coming to get the Fantastic Four coming back together. They didn't even, they jumped straight to this fantastic scene of all these characters. It was, this is my family. I was like, okay. I was expecting the Fantastic Four logo, and then having the coming together, and that was going to be where that was the part of the story, rather than this. Just, it would have even made more sense just to them bring the other two in, and then the four of them defeat her, rather than bringing in. I mean, that might be where it goes in the third issue. Where you're going to have all these characters beat her up. It just didn't go where I was expecting. I don't know if that was a. And that's sometimes not always a good thing. Sometimes swerving you when you're not ready, when you don't want the swerve, isn't really what you wanted. So that was a bit of an odd one.
Yeah, and I can see an argument for that. I'll wait and see where the swerve goes before I judge whether it's a good one or not. But I think most people, considering the Fantastic Four have been out of play for so long now, we're really just kind of hoping for a traditional Fantastic Four story where it's Ben and Johnny and Sue and Reed, and they do the Fantastic Four thing. And that's not what we're getting here. So I don't know. Like I said, I'm going to wait and see where they're going. We'll see what happens in issue 3 and 4 and all that fun stuff. But right now I'm very mixed on it. I am glad that we actually got to see their side of what was going on though. And that first half of the story really does give me hope that there are some interesting stories coming. The second half, much less so.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where it goes. I mean, I like the idea of, like I said, having the Fantastic Four back and having them in a monthly book, because then it's like, you know, a month between seeing them. So that's fine for me. But yeah, it wasn't where I was expecting it to go. But that's sometimes when you have a curve and a swerve and all this kind of things, that's good because you're not expecting it. This was a bit like, yeah, probably wasn't really where I thought you were going to go at all. And I'm not sure, but we'll have to know your thoughts on that. Any other books from this week?
I'll do very, very briefly. I did Exiles, which is the nominal What If book. I know we were talking about the Infinity Wars as kind of a What If, but Exiles is the actual What If. It was an origin issue where they talked about the various characters, and it's like each character is supposed to be defending their action from this rogue group of Watchers, and it's just this is my history. Some of the characters we knew, some of the characters we didn't. It was an okay issue. It's kind of filling space and giving us information we should have had already. And then lastly, finish off with X-23, number 4.
Yeah.
We're in the middle of an Emma Frost arc, and without getting too spoilerish, next issue is going to be crazy. Mm. Absolutely nuts. Because we're going to have Gabby, Honey Badger, fighting against X-23, and there's going to be psychic powers flowing around and all sorts of weird stuff. And I'm not sure if I'm excited or not, but I'm going to check it out. And so far it's been a really good series. So I'm kind of optimistic about issue 5, but I'm expecting it to be very weird.
So. Yeah, this is the thing. I mean, you look at like the list of every week when I put together the list of comic books coming out, and it's that thing of everyone can only read so many. There's only so many you can buy, and it's that thing of cherry picking what you're interested in and what else. And yeah, there was a lot. There did seem to be a lot out this week. Sometimes I do still think there's a little bit too many, but nevertheless, we'd love to know what you guys think are some of the comic books. Do you agree with us? Do you not agree with us? What are you? Is there some books that you maybe recommend? We'd love to know your thoughts as well. Get in touch with us. Go check us out over at DizKingdom.com. Like, follow, and subscribe on all the different audio and video platforms. James, where can they find you?
Find me at heroiclegacy.com.
And on that, guys, thank you very much for joining us. We'll be back soon. Laters.